Today is still June 19th, 2019, and this is episode number 516 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I am Brian Chaffin. I am editor-in-chief of TMO, and I still have so much cleaning to do. It's like deja vu all over still. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. I'm going to get that out. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can join us at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you straight to our Facebook group that is just for the Context Machine. Now, today I am joined by Andrew Orr, speaking of Facebook, because he is our resident Facebook harbinger at TMO. Welcome, Mr. Andrew.
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me. Good to be here, as always.
Thank you, man. I do appreciate that kindly. Now, today we're going to be talking about Libra and Facebook again, speaking of Facebook. I should also mention that this show is sponsored by Clear. I'm going to tell you all about them, give you a sneak preview, though. They can make your travel less stressful. Looking forward to telling you all about that. And so we're going to be talking. Today's going to be a little bit different. I'm not even sure exactly where the conversation is going to go, but we're going to be talking about Libra and Facebook and Libra and cryptocurrency and some more Facebook, maybe some banking. We'll see just how many things that we have no business talking about we can get into. So let's start off, Andrew, with Facebook and Libra.
Yep.
So I guess I will tell you what Libra is. Libra is a new cryptocurrency that is being launched by Facebook. Was it 2020? Do you remember?
That sounds familiar.
Or maybe Calibra will be off the ground in 2020. I forget which. Anyway, it is a cryptocurrency that is being controlled by this other organization. And then Facebook will have Calibra, because that's not at all confusing, which is their wallet slash entry and control point for the Libra blockchain. Right, so Libra will ostensibly be independent, but really, you know, it's controlled by Facebook, so whatevs.
Yeah.
And it'll be the companies that are part of this Libra organization essentially all ponied up $10 million apiece to be part of it. They're going to be operating the computers that verify the math that encrypts the blockchain. So unlike most cryptocurrencies are open to anyone who wants to throw their computing power at maintaining the integrity of the network. Mm-hmm. And but with Libra, it'll be just these companies, at least at the very beginning, and probably I imagine it'll stay that way. That are basically paying to be a part of this. And let's see here. We talked about this on TDO, and our intention here is to go deep on this today and explore it to its fullest, because neither Andrew or I are cool with it.
Nope. But when we did talk about it on TDO, didn't you mention that it's not a true cryptocurrency?
No.
Or am I making that up?
Well, you may have. Maybe you interpreted something I said. Do you remember what it is exactly that I said?
No.
So, I mean, it's a cryptocurrency from the standpoint that it is based on a blockchain. This blockchain will be controlled by Facebook. It's being developed by Facebook. And again, theoretically, under the auspices of this third-party independent, quote-unquote independent organization. And so in that a cryptocurrency is all the things that we know of as cryptocurrencies are based on some form of blockchain. It's a cryptocurrency. It's just one that's okay. tightly controlled by a company as opposed to not a company. And it's also yeah. backed by dollars and euros. Like they're basically taking this money that these companies have ponied up to be part of this organization, and they're using that to buy various assets that'll be used to back Libra, giving it more tangible value than most cryptocurrencies have.
So I'm assuming that, unlike with Bitcoin, you probably couldn't mine Libra, right?
Well, so yeah, we should maybe explain that. The way most of the cryptocurrencies, certainly most of the successful or semi-successful or you know, emergingly successful cryptocurrencies work, there is a blockchain. The blockchain is encrypted. The transactions that occur on that blockchain are verified by people who are throwing their computer power at it. That's called mining. They don't all work that way, but that's how most of them work. And in return for being willing to do that, new units of that cryptocurrency are created periodically, randomly, I might add. Mm-hmm. There was actually, I don't know if you know this, there was, I think, a full day went by once where not a single block was found on the Bitcoin blockchain. And then, but then there are other cryptocurrencies that use what's called proof of work proof of stake as opposed to proof of work. Proof of work is basically I could just throw my computer at it anytime I want. Proof of stake mm-hmm. is, hey, look, I've got X amount of this cryptocurrency, so I am vying for the right to spend some time verifying this math, and in return, I'm going to get some of those newly created units. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay.
Right, so that's called proof of stake. And proof of work is when, again, anybody could throw their computers at it. And what happens is the more computers are thrown at it, the harder the math gets. And then the harder the math gets, the more computers get thrown at it. So this is why you see stories about how much electricity all of the Bitcoin miners are using. Is because the math gets harder and harder and harder. And if you want to keep getting those tasty fat Bitcoins, you got to keep throwing more computers at it.
Yeah, I think I remember you telling me that it's slowly, well, maybe, I don't know how slow, but in the future it's going to be harder to find blocks.
No, for Bitcoin, the number of Bitcoins you get will decrease. It does decrease over time.
Okay.
It halves roughly every 2 years. Roughly, and that is a very, very rough. So the number of Bitcoin, like it started off when Bitcoin was, you know, like Satoshi Nakamoto. I always get his name wrong.
Nakamoto.
I just did that earlier in the meeting today too. when it was, you know, him and some of his or her nerdy buddies doing this, every block included 100 Bitcoins. And then it halved to 50, and then it halved to 25, and then it halved to 12.5. And what's the current block size? I think we're at 12.5 now. Current block size Bitcoin. Can't remember if it's already halved. Anyway, it it will keep halving until roughly 2139 or 2138 when the last fraction of a Bitcoin will be produced.
It almost sounds like, have you ever heard of Zeno's paradox?
I have not.
John, I'm sure John would be familiar with this, but it's basically this mathematical thing where you can theoretically travel forever or something like that, because you go a distance and then you just keep like going half that distance and half and half and half, so you never really move anywhere, I guess.
Okay.
I'm totally butchering it, but it's basically the same concept where something keeps getting halved.
Okay. I remember such things from the number of points on a line when I was a youngster. Regardless, the point is, eventually the very last fraction of a Bitcoin will be produced. There are other cryptocurrencies like Dogecoin that don't decrease the number of Doge that are created. So there's constantly this large number of Doge that are being newly created. With Bitcoin, okay, there is a finite number of Bitcoins that will ever exist. And of course, I might point out that like the addition of quantum computing thrown into this mix, who knows what that's going to do to the speed. Because like, so basically like a block is produced roughly every 10 minutes right now on average.
Okay.
And then every 2 weeks, the math is adjusted to scale either up or down with the amount of computing power being thrown at it.
Oh.
Right? So if
so
you
it
throw,
automatically adjusts.
Right. Right. It adjusts itself. And so like during that 2 weeks, what will happen is that the rate at which blocks are discovered increases. And then if the overall hashing power on the network increases. Conversely, okay, if the amount of hashing power decreased, the math could get easier. And so, but with what Facebook is doing, they won't be doing that. It's just the companies that are involved in this organization that are actually keeping everything secure, which, quite frankly, has its own security risks involved with it, because there's fewer points of you know, contact, really, where someone could try to break in and mess things up.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting to me. But then there is the reason why Facebook even went the crypto route. I think, and I know that when I first heard that Facebook wanted to do its own cryptocurrency, I was thinking, oh my God, you're kidding me. You know, that's just bandwagon jumping. And that's not the case. After hearing what they have planned for it, I realized that Facebook has chosen to go the crypto route because it is essentially creating its own currency. And cryptocurrency technology, the blockchain, allows Facebook to do this. It could theoretically allow Facebook to supersede all the central banks, including the Federal Reserve here in the United States, the China's central bank, Russia's central bank, Germany's central bank. You know, if Facebook is allowed to pursue everything that it seems like it wants to do, there would essentially be like another national currency, the nation of Facebook currency with Zuckbucks. And that's why Facebook is doing this. And that's why it disturbs me so much, because like, I did not wake up this morning and say to myself, man, I wish there was some new way that Facebook could dominate more of everything. And I don't really think anyone besides Mark Zuckerberg and maybe his closest cronies ever do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, In a way, it almost makes sense because you mentioned that this is a way to, like, what's the word? Like, broaden their revenue stream.
Yeah, they're diversifying. They're diversifying their revenue sources, and I guess we should explain how that's gonna work. So, while there's this Libra organization that is running the blockchain, Facebook will have Calibra, which is, as I mentioned, their wallet for the Libra chain, the Libra blockchain. So it'll be the entry point and control point for that is completely controlled by Facebook, that allows them to basically offer financial services. So, like, mm-hmm. the ability for you and me to send each other money, like PayPal allows with Venmo, or Apple Pay allows with Apple Pay Cash. The ability to take payments, Facebook could do that too. The ability to loan people money, that could be, depending on how they design the blockchain, that could be a thing. Ability to, you know, handle remittances from one country to another. That's a huge business. The ability for, again, retailers and businesses to take payments and to settle up payments just like banks do today. And these are all things where Facebook could make money by charging some kind of fee. And that would greatly diversify their revenue stream from, which is right now almost entirely ad centric.
Yeah, because one of the people from Facebook claims that they won't make ads from this. And I mean, of course, I don't believe them, but for now, they won't.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, well, there's two aspects of that. One, they're saying that now, but who knows what will be the case in 6 months or 6 years or 60 years.
Yeah.
Right? Because that could change because Facebook controls it. And two, I mean, this could end up dwarfing Facebook's ad revenue. This could become the thing that Facebook makes its money from. Hmm. It could be a very, very big deal. And if it becomes that big deal, it is a threat to central banks, or at the very least, it could put Facebook on the same footing as governments. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't want Facebook having that power. I don't.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of this quote, and I don't remember who said it, but it was, I think it was like an older rich person, like the Rothschilds or something. And he said something like, I don't care who is in control in the government, because he who controls the money controls the world or something.
Okay.
And that sounds like exactly up Mark Zuckerberg's alley.
It really, 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 really does. All right. I want to take a second out. I want to talk to you about Clear. You know, and it's funny, Andrew, because this sponsor is just so spot on for me personally at this very moment. I am not an organized person, and I'm not known for being on time, and I'm preparing a trip like right now. And that's where Clear comes in. This service uses your fingertips and eyes to speed you through security checks at airports. And seriously, how cool would that be? You set up your account online before your next trip, and when you get to the airport, a Clear ambassador will finish the process. From then on, with a tap of your fingertips, you can go right into security to help you get to your gate even faster. And Clear is in many stadiums, too. In fact, they're in more than 50 airports and stadiums right now. And with your membership, you'll get through security faster. Plus, up to 3 adult family members can be added at a discounted rate, and kids under 18 are free when traveling with a Clear member. And because they are sponsoring the Apple Context Machine, you get your first 2 months of Clear for free. Go to clearme.com/context and use code context. That's CLEARME.com/context with the code context, clearme.com/context, for your free 2 months of Clear. All right, looking, Andrew, at looking at where this could go, there was another line. There was a New York Times piece. We'll have a link in the show notes to this New York Times piece, and now I have to find it again because that's kind of how I roll sometimes. What's that? What's the quote? The quote about the algorithm. Do you have that?
Let's see.
Oh, I found it. Imagine Facebook knowing your account balance and your spending and offering to sell a retailer an algorithm that will maximize the price for what you can afford to pay for a product. Imagine that.
Yeah.
That is something that Facebook could do here.
And I'm imagining them almost being like threatening about it. Like, we've scanned your history and we think you can pay just a little bit more.
Even scarier. So imagine that if you and I pull, let's say that Amazon got in on this and you and I pulled up the same page on Amazon, the same product, and I got one price based on my spending habits, my bank balance, my history, and you got a different price.
Yeah, I wonder how that would work, too. Like, maybe if you don't spend as much, it would be more expensive?
Well, I mean, the Facebook has enough data about us to know what we, well, they could have, okay, they have enough data about us to know a lot about the decisions we make. If you now give them access to your financial data and every purchase you're making, or at least every person you're making across Libra, they would have the data to be able to match what kind of person you are, who you are, what your habits are, along with your bank balance, and have all of this being done in real time, dictating what you see when you pull up a retailer. That is a possibility. Facebook has not said they're going to do this. This is this piece in the New York Times suggesting that that's something they could do, and that's correct. This is something that Facebook could do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of thing that you would not be able to manipulate. There's no way you would be able to manipulate it so that Facebook is giving you a lower price for something. You would not be able to manipulate this.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be some, if they do that, you know, this is just hypothetical, but what if we both of us did look at the same Amazon page and then say if you had a lower price, like you could buy that, I could send you the money and then I would still get it at that price.
Yeah, and then if you were doing that across Libra, Facebook would know and work that into its calculations next time.
So from what I've read it, that's the most terrifying thing to me is that it sounds like Facebook would have access to your entire transaction history.
Facebook would have access to your entire transaction history that was conducted across Libra. Do you remember when, was it you that mentioned this on TDO? That there was a few years ago, Facebook tried to make a deal with banks.
Yeah.
Where they were getting
that.
Where they were getting information from your banks about what you do.
Well, from what I read, they tried.
They tried.
Yeah. And thankfully, the bank said no. Like, actually, no, we're not going to give you our customers' financial data.
Well,
so you, now
you say thankfully they did this, and I agree with you, but at the same time, that may well be when Mark Zuckerberg said, oh, fine.
That's what I was going to mention next. Like, now Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg is just rerouting and completely bypassing banks.
And central banks. That part can't be underestimated. Talk about making Facebook completely unaccountable for anything. You know, what was that other quote? There was that quote at the end. Did you already mention that? So this is the second time we recorded the show. Did you mention that on this recording or the first one?
So there's this other quote in this article that is, things we say just keep getting even more scary. And this is a real quote from Mark Zuckerberg. He says, in a lot of ways, Facebook is more like a government than a traditional company. We're really setting policies. This is like dystopia.
To me, it is. To me, it very, very much is. And this is like seeing how much Facebook, like every time, at least every time we learn, it seems like every time we turn around, we find out that Facebook had a decision to make about whether to do what's right or whether to do what they could do, and chose to do what they could do. And the devil with what's right. Like, for instance, manipulating us with psychological experiments without us opting in.
Yeah.
Right? And go ahead.
Like, people say, you know, Donald Trump is just the symptom of the Republican Party, not the cause. I think that's the same with Mark Zuckerberg. He is, I think, the symptom of this rampant capitalism that has been going on. And I'm not going to go into the larger detail of capitalism, but I think he is, right now, he is like the face of everything that's wrong with capitalism. At least that's the way I see it.
I wouldn't personally blame this on capitalism per se. I would instead, because, you know, my opinion, Andrew, and I've said this before on this show. I don't know if I said it on TDO. I don't even know if I said it to you. But there should always be tension between government regulation of a free market and the free market. You have too much regulation and all innovation and opportunity is gone. And you have too little regulation. You have too much free market and you get stuff like, you know, kids being sent into the sewing machines to fix them. And then the sewing machines being started while the kids are still in there because it's cheaper to hire a new kid to replace the dead kid than it is to not keep those machines running for another 5 minutes so the kid can come out. Or rat hairs in butter or rancid meat. I mean, like, you know, you go back to the horrors of the 1880s when the U.S. was very, very, very laissez-faire. And today, you look at the pollution that is done because it can be done. Look at the cheating that is done because it can be done. There should always be tension between these two forces. And sometimes we will have too much regulation and sometimes we will have too little regulation because there is no perfect point because things are constantly changing. So you need that tension going back and forth. And I think right now that there are a lot of Silicon Valley tech companies have just simply moved too fast for the powers of regulation and legislation, especially here in the States, especially when seemingly for the last 12, 15, 16 years, the federal government has been less interested in regulating business, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know if you can blame this on capitalism per se. I think because we don't have a free market. We have a regulated market. But what we have is some companies that need to be regulated more. And we haven't figured out what that means yet. We haven't figured out how to regulate the Ubers. We haven't figured out how to regulate the Facebooks, the Googles, maybe the Apples. And so you have this Silicon Valley environment where anything goes. You know, like Facebook's big motto is what? Breaking stuff? Something about breaking stuff.
Yeah, move fast and break things.
Yeah, which you know, I love the spirit of that, but if you carry that too far, you break things that you shouldn't break. And, you know, right. I think that Uber did that with a lot of under Travis Kavanaugh. Is that his name? Kavanaugh? Kavanaugh?
Something like that.
Kalanick. Okay. Yeah, under his leadership, Uber would just constantly just, like, do stuff because they wanted to, regardless of existing government regulation, existing governments, and, you know, because they just felt like they were better than everybody else, and just, I don't know. It seems like Facebook does the same thing. And it's one of the things I said about Mark Zuckerberg is that he doesn't have the wisdom to wield the power he has created for himself.
Yeah, it's scary.
It is scary. And I don't trust Facebook to have potentially global, like, control of global currency or a big portion of global currency. Like, I have no doubt that Facebook will find hundreds of millions, if not more than a billion ready users, because like a lot of what they're talking about doing is stuff that could be really cool. Offering banking services to emerging markets in the third world that don't have access to financial services could be fantastic for folks in that market. I mean, like there is some potential good there. It's just we always see Facebook do the wrong thing.
And not even, you know, other countries over here. Like, I could see how something like this could be good for lower income people who may not have a good credit, so they can't open a bank account, for example. Like, I've heard of stories about that.
Sure. Or, you know, like the micro lending platforms.
Yeah.
Right? Where you can loan someone, this is usually someone in an emerging market somewhere, loan them a small amount of money for them to get a business going and to get paid back over time. They've had fantastic results with that, but using cryptocurrency could reduce a lot of the financial fees that go along with that. And a company like Facebook, even if they were offering such services at lower fees, could still make a lot of money doing those sorts of things. And it would just accumulate more power in the hands of Facebook. You know, this is something I hadn't thought of. There's already a movement to break Facebook up. I don't even know what that means, by the way. Like, break them up into what?
Yeah.
Right.
Because I just wrote today that, you know, we heard in the past about how Elizabeth Warren has specifically called to break up, I think, Apple and Facebook and maybe Google. Today I wrote that Bernie Sanders, he didn't specifically say to break them up, but he said there should be some investigations into them.
Yeah, there's definitely a There's definitely a movement there. I assumed that would translate into Big Nothing Burgers, no matter who is elected president next. But the notion of breaking Facebook up, I think, is usually uttered by someone who has no idea how that would even work. You could separate WhatsApp. You could separate Messenger, I suppose. You could separate Instagram, sure. You could maybe separate the content business from the advertising business. But I mean, but at that point, like Facebook, I mean, like what pays for Facebook? I mean, you know, being the product is what pays for the darn platform. Right? So, I mean, like, break up Facebook so that you have North American Facebook and Chinese Facebook. I mean, like, there's no way to break up Facebook. That's just not happening. You could break up Google from the standpoint of the fact that there are a bunch of different services that Google does. You could break up Alphabet. Yeah. You could theoretically break up Apple. But you're not breaking. I mean, like broken up Facebook isn't even, it's just not even a thing. Aside from separating Instagram and you know WhatsApp that's not the problem. That's not the problem with Facebook. Facebook's problem is not that it owns Instagram. Facebook's problem is what it does with our data.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the mistakes the company makes when it comes to the choices they make about our data.
So what do you think about, instead of breaking up Facebook, what about getting some way to remove Mark Zuckerberg? Because right now there is no way, because he still controls the majority of the stocks. Like, do you think having a new CEO would help?
I don't even know. And who's going to do that? Is the government going to decide that Mark Zuckerberg can't be CEO of Facebook? That's a scary path to go down too. That's a super scary path. I mean, that is probably unconstitutional. And there is no reason for shareholders to want Mark Zuckerberg out. He's making the money.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing his job. So I don't really know what the answer is, but I know that if Facebook and Libra would probably need to be separated and heavily regulated.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me. It's interesting to me that Facebook is heading down this path. And this is something they've been working on for years. But it's interesting to me that they're heading down this path when there's already noise being made about breaking the company up. Again, that's nonsense. But the point is that noise is being made. And now what they're proposing is that they amass orders of magnitude of new additional powers.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned it before. I just don't think they care.
No, like, I think that they think that they're above the law.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they know, like you said, I'm sure they know that they can't be broken up.
Well, they could be, anyway, I think that Mark Zuckerberg sat through congressional hearings, said nothing, and got away with it.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably the proof in the pudding that he would need to know that he can get away with it. So, and the problem too is that I think it's even hard to put your finger on exactly what the problem is with Facebook. But yeah, okay, the problem is that they're misusing our data. The problem is that they're collecting data. The problem is that they're allowing third parties to have access to our data in ways that they shouldn't. The problem is that they conduct psychological experiments on us. The problem is that they freaking store our passwords in plain text, for goodness sake. Sometimes, at least. Mm-hmm. And then lie about it. Or at the very least, you know, slowly reveal the truth. I don't know if the person doing the lying knows that they're lying. So, but I mean, it's really hard to identify what the actual problem there is. We see the symptoms, not necessarily the actual issue. Unless, of course, yeah, the actual issue is surveillance capitalism itself.
Well, right, and that's why I had made that capitalism comment earlier. But I think maybe you could just say, I don't think they have any values or morals or ethics.
Yeah. There is increasing evidence of that. Or at the very least, that morals and ethics and values get supplanted, and get supplanted by the pursuit of more.
Yeah. So how did the government handle Microsoft? Because I know they didn't get broken up, but how did they, like, rein them in?
They did not rein them in. So under the Clinton administration, the DOJ pursued a antitrust case against Microsoft, in part for bundling Internet Explorer with Windows and thus, you know, crashing the browser market and essentially knocking all the other browsers out of the market. And the DOJ won that case. And the problem is, in my opinion, that the Clinton administration ended, the George W. Bush administration came in, and that DOJ was not interested in that case. That DOJ was not interested in antitrust. That DOJ was not interested in reining in businesses. So the appeal was handled by the DOJ under the George W. Bush administration and not the David Boise, the brilliant attorney who actually beat Microsoft in court. And so Microsoft appealed, and now they've got new people leading the case. And these people theoretically have to do this case, but their hearts aren't in it. And so through the appeals process, Microsoft was able to delay and to obfuscate and to delay and to be problematic. Also, Microsoft behaved so abysmally during the trial that they got the judge to show bias.
Oh, wow.
And because the judge showed bias, they were able to get some aspects of their conviction thrown out. And so by the time the case was settled, Microsoft agreed to some largely irrelevant changes, and the computer market had also changed a little bit. But the whole point is that Microsoft really got a slap on the wrist for clearly using its monopoly power in operating systems to gain market share in the browser market, which is a violation of antitrust.
Okay.
And in the end, nothing really happened. Nothing real happened.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's political reality, really, is what it is.
Move fast and break things.
Move fast and I guess, although Microsoft moving fast is LOL, but I don't know. Getting back to Facebook and Libra and Calibra, the real story here, just to sort of wrap this up, the real story here is that Facebook sees cryptocurrency technology as the way for them to essentially go into competition with central banks, and that they intend to use their enormous platform to become instrumental in the lives of a whole lot of people, especially in emerging markets, and to become a financial services powerhouse probably quickly. And the whole thing is worrisome to me.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Mr. Andrew Orr, I want to thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a good discussion.
Indeed, it was. I want to thank Clear for sponsoring the show. I want to thank Clear for sponsoring the show, and you can find out more about them at clearme.com/context. That's clearme.com/context. And you can also use the code context to get free 2 months of Clear. I appreciate them sponsoring the show. You should absolutely positively check them out. And once again, Andrew, thanks very much, man.
See you in the future.
See you in the future. That is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that is all for this week.